to another episode of the Strange Matters podcast. Here at Strange Matters, we discuss anything that is mysterious, bizarre, and unexplained. I am Sean, and I will be the host for this episode. For this discussion, I wanted to talk about one of the first unsolved cases that really hooked me in. I'd first heard about it a few years ago, and I've looked into it several times since. And to this day, it just remains one of my favorite mysteries. It is truly a grisly and disturbing story. It still unsettles and creeps me out just as much as it did the first time I read into it. So today, of course, I want to be talking about the Hinterkaifeck murders. To summarize what this unsettling mystery is all about, nearly 100 years ago in a small German farmstead, an entire family was killed in a brutal and grisly fashion. Not only is the crime itself disturbing, but there are a few creepy circumstances surrounding this case that makes Hinterkaifeck one of the most interesting unsolved mysteries that I know of. It really has everything that makes up a dark mystery. Violent crime, a creepy isolated setting, and just a few clues as to what really happened. In this episode, I'll give the backstory and setting of the crime, and the possible theories as to who committed this act, and my final thoughts on the whole mystery. So let's get into it. The crime took place in March of the year 1922 on a small farmstead known as Hinterkaifeck. Now, Hinterkaifeck is not an actual official name of any regions in Germany, but the name has become synonymous with this crime. The farm where this scene took place is located near the small town of Kaifeck in Germany, and the prefix Hinter comes from German language and basically just means behind or the back of. Thus, the farmstead nestled in the woods near this town became known as Hinterkaifeck. Living on the farm was the married couple of Andreas Gruber and his wife Casilla. Living with them was their widowed daughter named Victoria and her two young children. Casilla, named after her grandmother, was 7 years old, and her little brother Joseph was only two. The maid, Maria, who died along with the family that day, was actually just hired. Unfortunately for Maria, she had arrived to start working there on the very day that this brutal crime took place. Personally, I can't think of a worse way for the first day of the job to go. It's a shame that she couldn't have been at least a day late. Before we get to the actual slayings of the family, there are a few pretty unnerving and creepy elements leading up to the crime that I want to discuss first. Andreas Gruber, the father of the family, had noticed a few strange things going on at his farmstead in the few days leading up to his last day. Gruber had mentioned these things to his neighbors, but unfortunately no one thought it was serious enough to trouble the police with. In hindsight, we can see that these can be obvious precursors to the crime that would happen, but to the family, they probably just thought it was a few random and strange occurrences and nothing more. One of the things that Andreas Gruber found on his farm that was kind of mysterious is that one day he found footprints that led from the edge of the woods into his barn, but then no footprints leading out. He searched and didn't find anything, but he mentioned to his neighbors. Also, the family found a newspaper that none of them had read or subscribed to on the property. There's also reportedly noises in the attic that the family heard, and they couldn't figure out where the sounds were coming from. A pair of the keys to the house were missing. And one last thing is that the previous maid who had left months before this claimed that the place was haunted, and that was the reason why she left. I wasn't able to figure out if she had mentioned the hauntings before or after the murders, so I don't know if she's just trying to build up the story or anything, but yeah, apparently the maid thought the place was haunted, so she left. Now onto the actual crime itself. Though investigators cannot be entirely certain of what happened, they are pretty sure of a good number of things in this case. The murders are believed to have taken place on a Friday, though the exact time of death and order of death is unknown for the most part. After a few days, people around the area became worried since no one had seen any of the family members. School teachers had made note that Casilla had been absent from school without any word why, and the postman found that the mail from the previous week was still where he left it. Finally, after a few days, some curious neighbors went over to check out the place, and that is when they made the gruesome discovery of the family. All five members of the family, plus the new maid, were found brutally murdered. The bloody bodies of Andreas and his wife, along with his daughter and granddaughter, were all found in the barn, partially covered with hay. Investigators believe that whoever the killer was managed to lure the family into the barn one by one, killing them as they entered and then waiting for the next. The new maid was found slain in her bedroom, and worst of all, young Joseph was found killed in his bassinet. I found a report of the investigation along with the autopsy report on a German website and translated as best I could, and the details of the murder scene is pretty disturbing. Andreas Gruber had the right side of his head smashed in, exposing his cheekbones and leaving his face crusted with blood. His wife, Kazilla, had bruising around her right eye and received 7 hard blows to her head, cracking her skull open. Victoria had taken probably the most damage, as the autopsy showed that she had 9 hits to the head, smashing in the right side of her face and also cracking her skull. A small round injury to the top of her head looked like it had come from a heavy pointed object. She also had strangulation marks along her neck. What happened to 7-year-old Kazilla is one of the more memorable and disturbing aspects of this crime. The little girl received several blows to the head with a blunt object, breaking her lower jaw. Her nose and the right side of her face were smashed and bloodied, and she had a gaping wound to her neck. In spite of these traumatic injuries, Kazilla did not die immediately, but she actually lived for several hours before finally dying of shock. Even worse, for those hours, Kazilla lay bleeding and terrified, surrounded by the mutilated corpses of her mother and grandparents. Investigators found in her hands that she had torn tufts of her own hair out in anguish as she slowly lay dying in the barn next to her family. Doctors who examined her later believed that she could have been saved if she'd received timely treatment. Unfortunately, in the isolated farmstead with no one nearby but the murderer, she had no chance of survival. Inside the house, the maid was found dead in her new room, murdered by a crosswise blow to her head, and her skull was a hole about an inch deep, presumably from a sharp hoe. Her face was completely encrusted in blood. The toddler, Joseph, was killed by a heavy blow to the face. The roof of the baby carriage was collapsed as well. And this makes me think that the killer probably attacked the young child by swinging his weapon downward through the top of the bassinet, so he did not have to see the boy directly as he killed him. When investigators arrived, they were completely puzzled by this terrible crime. The rural area, this kind of thing just didn't happen. They quickly tried to find as many clues as they could to try to piece together what happened. Due to the lack of any obvious clues and the pretty primitive work of the local police, though, there's really only so much that they could say for certain. The main murder weapon was believed to be a mattock, and if you don't know what it is, it's basically a pickaxe, just a multi-purpose farm tool. It has 2 blades on the head, 1 vertical and 1 horizontal. And actually, the mattock that was believed to be the murder weapon was not found when it happened. It was only discovered a year later when the barn was demolished. A former employee of the family identified the farm tool and said that Mr. Gruber had actually constructed it himself. It kind of makes it worse in my opinion that Gruber probably spent some time building and using it, only to have it turn against him and his whole family. Law enforcement originally thought that this crime might have been burglary related and that the murders were just a robbery gone wrong. However, there's no expensive items were taken from the house, and there was also a decent amount of cash inside the house that was left over and that any seasoned thief would have found easily. In fact, the house was not ransacked at all, it's quite the opposite, which leads to another one of the strangest parts of this mystery, and that apparently whoever committed these murders decided to stay at the house for several days afterwards, living there as if they owned the place. He kept the house clean and even took care of the animals and livestock that belonged to the family, carrying out the daily farm chores that needed to be done. Neighbors even saw smoke coming from the chimney during the days that the family was already dead. To me, this is very bizarre, but also shows a few things about the killer. Obviously, he knew his way around a farm, and that's going to factor in later when we talk about theories. It also shows that they were pretty calm or even confident that they wouldn't be caught there, or if they were, that they would be able to either escape or kill anyone coming to Hinterkaifeck who would be able to identify them. Lastly, it adds another layer of psychotic behavior, showing this person was so cold-blooded that they could live on a farm surrounded by dead bodies that they murdered and just carry on the work as if nothing had happened. Alright, so that was the crime. Let's talk about the theories behind who people think are responsible for these murders. I'm going to start, as always, from the least likely up to what I think is the most likely. So the first theory is barely a theory at all in my book. Remember when I mentioned that the haunting of the former maid claimed? Apparently some people think that maybe evil spirits manifested or perhaps possessed someone nearby to carry out this crime. However, there's just no evidence or any other statements from anybody else of any other supernatural elements. So I bring that up just because I've heard people claim that, but to me that's not likely, and we'll just move on. So Andrea's daughter, Victoria, had a husband named Carl Gabriel, and he was killed in World War I. However, some people say that he faked his death, and upon finding his wife with children that did not belong to him, he murdered her and her family in a blind rage. Now, it was never found, which led some to believe that he managed to escape and live under a new identity after the war. However, I just think that's very unlikely that he faked his death. Other men in his unit saw him die and could clearly identify his corpse as it laid on the battlefield, even though they could not recover it later. Even if he did fake his death, this theory just doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, if he loved Victoria so much that he would be passionate enough to kill her and her entire family, why did he wait almost a decade to come back to her after his alleged fake death? And also, why on earth would he feel the need to kill not only Victoria's parents, but innocent children as well? When you think about it, it's not like she was actually being unfaithful to him since everyone believed he was dead. So once again, those theories I just do not buy into at all. So let's talk about the more likely scenarios. The first being is that this was an entirely random encounter, meaning that whoever did this crime had no prior relationship with the family at all. Now I see that there are two different sides to this idea. One is more just a bad series of circumstances, while the other option is a much more violent and sinister. So the first part of this theory that I can think of is that it's just some random person was traveling, or maybe it was homeless or from the run from somebody, and they decided to just camp out at Hinterkaifeck for a while. Now remember that Andreas Gruber mentioned a few strange things going on around the house a few days leading up to the murder, including the unknown footprints and sounds in the attic. This could mean that this stranger just wanted to try and hide out and keep out of the family's way for a few days. However, one of the family members may have caught this person in the barn and either yelled at them to leave or threatened them harm, and then this person just freaked out and attacked them. Now whether he meant to kill the family member or not, after beating his first victim to death, it's possible that he just panicked, and while waiting in the barn trying to think of what to do, other family members showed up, and once again he felt the need to kill them off and to protect himself, staying hidden. This theory may be the answer, but in my mind it just starts to break down when you consider this person, after already killing four people in the barn, then decided to go into the house and kill the maid and a helpless child. This just seems way too cold-blooded and cruel to be an unlikely encounter from a random stranger. So that leads me into the flip side of that theory, is that the random person who carried out these crimes was that either a deranged person or maybe even a serial killer who deliberately decided to wipe out the entire Gruber family. I'm sure everyone has at least once in their life had the fear of some psychopath just breaking into their house and killing everybody, and in this theory it's pretty much what happened. So this possibility basically lays out that a person stalked out and studied the family for several days leading up to the murder with the complete intention of killing at least one, but more likely the entire Gruber family. This thought is pretty terrifying to me, imagining the family just going about their day-to-day business without knowing that they were being watched by a killer who was just waiting for that right time to strike. On the day of the crime, this person then either lured one family member to the barn or just happened to catch them unaware there and decided it was a perfect time to strike. And after killing the first person, they then patiently waited for the rest of the family to come in one by one so he can finish them off as well. And then, to end the murders, he then entered the house to kill the child, and perhaps he was even surprised to see the maid there since she had just arrived hours before this took place. The nature and ferocity of the crimes would definitely suggest that it was a deeply disturbed person who carried out these murders. Now, you may think this scenario sounds a bit too unrealistic and it's more likely the plot of a horror movie than actual real life. A deranged man picking a family at random in a murder. But unfortunately, this has happened numerous times. An example that fits this MO would be the American serial killer Dennis Rader, aka the BTK killer. Now, Rader would pick his victims pretty much at random, stalk them up to a few weeks at a time, memorize their schedules, and determine the best way to attack. And just like the Hinterkaifeck murders, Rader actually wiped out an entire family on one of his murder outings, including children. Along with the BTK, other serial killers such as Richard Ramirez, known as the Night Stalker, have been known to break into their victims' homes beforehand and stay hidden inside for hours at a time, waiting for the victims to come home, watching them, and waiting for the right time to kill them. Now, I've looked up the known German serial killers that were active in the 1920s, and it just doesn't seem possible that any of them had anything to do with this. Either the timeline doesn't work out, or this is completely out of their MO of their usual crimes. There is a chance that whoever carried out this terrible crime either did it as a one-time thing, or perhaps they were caught for another crime or died before they could strike again. But to me, that seems unlikely also. So I do hold that the possibility that a completely random killer could have carried out these murders, I think that there is a more likely reason someone committed the murders at Hitter Kaifek. And that is my final possibility to present, and it's probably the most likely scenario. I know it's a theory that most people believe to be the true reason these crimes were committed. And in this theory, it is that the murders were a personal crime done by someone who knew the family. The most likely suspects in this case are one of the neighbors, or perhaps someone who had become enemies with Andreas Gruber, or even a jilted ex-lover of Victoria. I actually think that the last idea is the most likely, in my opinion, just because Victoria received the most damage and also had the strangulation marks, you know, making her murder much more personal than the others. A lot of people think that one of the neighbors is the main suspect, as it was rumored that he had relationships with Victoria and was even the father of her two-year-old son. Two things that are holding me back from completely believing this theory, though. The first and most obvious is that the person murdered the entire family, including the young boy. So why would this neighbor suddenly feel the need to wipe out the family and kill his own son? It just doesn't make any sense to me. Also, the murderer was at the farm for quite some time, both a few days leading up to the crime when he was hiding out, and then also for, you know, 2 to 3 days afterwards when he was taking care of the place when the family was already murdered. If it was one of the neighbors, you would think that someone would have noticed that they were missing from their own homes for just as much time as the Grubers were. It just doesn't make sense to me. But I know that's a theory that a lot of people think are the right ones. Now, in 2007, a German police academy kind of reopened this case and investigated it using the more modern criminal investigation techniques to see if they could figure out who it was. And they basically concluded that it's impossible to know for certainty who committed these murders at this time. You know, it's just not enough evidence found at the scene of the crime. There was no sketches made. They didn't get any fingerprints or DNA, really. And it's possible that whoever committed these crimes passed away already. Now, at the end of their investigation, they did come up with one person who they believe is the main suspect and the most likely person who carried out these murders, but unfortunately, they never released the identity out of respect for the still living relatives of the family. They didn't want to bring up bad blood, so they kept that pretty much hidden, which is kind of a shame. I can see their point, but it would really be nice to know who they believe to be the killer behind all these. And that wraps up this story of the Hinner Kaifek. There's this unresolved mystery of 6 people murdered in an isolated farmstead in Germany. Like I said at the beginning of the episode, this is really one of my favorite mysteries. There's just so much going on. There's a lot of creepy stuff that happens before and after the crimes that add to just the disturbing nature of it. There's just enough clues that you can come up with all these different types of theories, but not enough clues that you can really single one out as being the absolute best one. I kind of go back and forth over what theory I think is the best one. However, like most people do, I think that it was a personal crime and that it was someone who knew the family who carried it out. Whether it was one of the neighbors or not, I can't say for certain. So yeah, that's the story of Hinner Kaifek. I hope you all enjoyed listening to this episode. If you would like to leave a comment, you can do it on our website, strangematterspodcast.com. If you have any feedback or suggestions for further episodes, you can email us at strangematterspodcast@gmail.com. We are also on iTunes now, and if you are listening, it would help us a lot if you leave a rating or a review. It helps boost our podcast and attract new listeners. We also have a Facebook page if you want to check that out. We have been getting a lot of good feedback from people, getting some good ideas for future episodes, so we greatly appreciate that. It means a lot to us. We are trying to decide what our next series of episodes are about, and we would definitely take your suggestions into account. You guys have been sending in a lot of good mysteries and just weird stuff that we want to cover. Thank you for all those who have done that, and thank you for listening to this episode. I hope you enjoyed it. We will see you next time in the Strange Matters Podcast. Take care.